I was going to put all the things I had on PowerPoint, but I decided I better learn how to walk before I run. And so this is going to be the name of my lesson, the rule book. And from time that we're born, we are in the process of learning rules. I mean, a baby, just as soon as he's able to process some things, a good parent is going to be teaching him. And they're going to teach him what's right, what's wrong, what not to do. Don't get burnt. Don't climb up on this staircase. Don't do this. Don't do that. I did it to my children. They broke every rule I had. But they made it through life. But they will grow, and they'll grow, and they'll grow. And the more they grow, the more rules that they're going to have to face. And this is a continuation all the way up. The more responsibility we have in life, the more rules that we have to go by. And so, but they'll grow and they'll get to kindergarten. Now, I've always heard that if you go to kindergarten, everything you learn in kindergarten, that's all you need to know to go through life, because you learn how to share, you learn to be friends. But as they get to kindergarten, they get more rules, more responsibilities. In the first grade, more rules, more responsibilities. I got my first whipping by Sister Sparks in the second grade because I didn't obey her rules. And she could whip your hand real well. But today, parents around the world they think their children are better than the rules. And that's one of the things that's going to cause the collapse of this country, is because parents do not support the teachers and everything, but that's beside the point. Let me go on. You know, they grow and they grow and they get into high school, always attaining more rules, always getting more strict rules. When they turn 16, they're grown up, they think. The state of Alabama will give them the privilege to drive a vehicle if they can pass all the rules in the rule book. And if they can drive, they have to show that they can drive a vehicle with an officer of the state that will approve them. Then they get out, and if they're lucky, if they break the rules, they'll only have to pay a ticket. A lot of children get killed. You know, we see so sad people getting killed because they get their license, and, you know, not everybody in here has a speeding ticket. Thunder Nelson's here today. He pulled me over when I was 16, 17. And he didn't write me a ticket, though. But everybody in here has had tickets. I'm the world's worst. I go to work. I drive a lot in my work. I'll drive 52,000 miles a year. But when I get in my vehicle, I'm supposed to have my eyes on and ears and everything centered on driving that vehicle to where I'm going. But do I do that? No. I'm thinking about what I've got to do at work, what's happening at home, everything in the world, because you're relaxed, you're going down the road, and next thing you know, you're doing, I'm not going to tell you how fast, and you got a blue light behind you. Now, that's happened to me, and it's happened to a lot of you. And it's wrong. And I paid the penalty. But it was a good penalty because the officer informed me what I was doing wrong and probably saved my life at sometimes. But things go on in life, and then we go to work. And in my case, the company I work for, we have four different divisions in my work. Most of y'all know what ISO is. And AES is ISO's aerospace. But we have to be certified. The other three divisions have to be certified. So that means my division has to be certified also. We have nothing to do with it because we're under a different certification, National Board. But they all have to intermesh. We've got a quality control man by the name of Jack Daniel, of all names. That is his real name. And he has this thing. His theory is every rule any company has is installed so where it can be broken. where it can be changed. And that's not necessarily true. You've got to follow the rules for there for a purpose. We have audits every 3 years. The national board come down, and Jack had changed our quality control manual to reflect ISO, which doesn't correspond to the national board. And I had informed the national board auditor of what problems we were going to have. And he said, well, I can handle Jack. So we sit down, and we're at the conference table, and we're going through everything bit by bit. So we get to the point that's in question. And Jack said, told the auditor, we need to change this. It doesn't fit our rules, and so we're going to change it from your rules. The National Board auditor sat there, looked at him real funny. He started gathering all his papers, put them in his briefcase. Jack said, where are you going? He said, I'm going back to the airport. And Jack said, why? He said, there's one thing I want you to know. You can negotiate with a terrorist, but when it comes to the National Board auditor, there's no negotiation. So Jack learned the hard way that you've got to follow the rule book. Well, we don't follow the rule book a lot of times in everything we do. Not to say that I'm not broken some rules at work as far as ISO standards go, as far as quality goes, because we do sometimes. But the ISO is to keep us on a standard. All rules are to keep us on a standard, and we need to realize that. Back in 1978, I got the wise idea I'd make a good baseball and basketball and football official. But then Shannon come along and my wife informed me that I was only going to be good at one of them, so I chose football. But from that time, I have found out one thing. Coaches, they don't care what the rules are, just so that they're, well, let me rephrase that, most coaches. And Bill, we're talking about football, we're not talking about baseball, so I don't know about y'all. But coaches, for the most part, do not care what the rules are. They care if their team's winning. Fans could care less what the rules are as long as their team wins. Players don't know the rules because the coaches haven't taught them in most cases. And that's a general statement in most cases. But I was selected one time to go to a football referee's camp. Evidently, they thought I needed help, so they sent me down to Troy State. And Coach Blakeney down there we were using Troy State players to learn how to call and do things. I got two of the umpires, which I was one of them, and we went to a special class. And he had all his offensive linemen, and ladies, offensive linemen are the ones that's in front of the quarterback trying to protect him. But he was training them how to hold without getting caught. He didn't train them how not to hold and block, but how to hold without getting caught. And he wanted to see if we could detect it. Of course, they were good at it, and we didn't detect all of them, but we did get a few. But that's one thing I found out through life, that the people of the world don't care about what's happening. I'm going to give you another. For instance, our crew was at Grissom and Albertville 1 year. And in the back of the rule book, there's a little thing about free kicks. 90% of the coaches don't even know it. But the two or three that do, use it. What the rule says, after a fair catch, you can ask for a free kick. A free kick is just like when they start the game, the two teams are separated by 10 yards, they kick the ball. But on this case, if the ball goes through the uprights, it's 3 points. Well, Albertville had the ball, they kicked out of the end zone, kicked it all the way to the 30. The boy fair caught, made a fair catch, gave a fair catch. So he calls timeout. He calls the referee over the side and says he's going for a free kick. Well, luckily, we knew what he was talking about. because we all lined up for a free kick. The Alamo coach is jumping up and down, calling timeout, so we go call timeout. And he explains to us that we don't know what in the world we're doing. And he is going to report us to the state. And then he continues to, finally he gets a 15-yard penalty, which now they're going to kick from the 15-yard line to the 30. Well, this is right before half. The boys lined up, they kick it, they get 3 points. Monday morning, we get a call from Dan Washburn, wanting to know why we didn't explain that better to the coach. Well, we did explain it to the coach, but the coach got 2 weeks suspension because he didn't know the rules, because he got a personal foul, and for his language, he got a 2-week suspension. Now, this guy is in charge of young adults. He is in charge of playing a game that he should know the rules for. He should know the rules better than anybody on there. This is a football rule book. This is a high school football rule book. Counting the index is about 98 pages. Doesn't take long to read it. Then they give you a case book. Well, the case book will take a rule and it will tell you everything you need to know about that rule and what the penalty would be. Well, we get 4 books. These books are all combined. I had this one combined so where I keep up with them better. So the coaches have their own rule book. It's, I don't know if you can see that or not, but it's cartoons. And they make cartoons better so where the coaches can understand it better, but they still don't get it. Sometimes they go away with a rule book because they don't want things are going bad for them. They know that they're getting holy, but we shouldn't be calling them, especially if we've got their contract or we can call their school all the time. Several years ago, we were at Decatur and Hartsel. This was when Steve Rivers was still at Decatur High School. Hartsel had a big kid. He wound up going to the University of Alabama and wound up playing pro ball. But he was a defensive end, and he had run around, and Decatur had nobody that could even pretend to block him. But Steve kept sending different players in. Well, he finally sent one in, and the kid discovered how he could block him. When he come through the line, he'd grab him on the ankles and tackle him. Well, that's fine, but it's against the rules, so I threw a flag. They had recovered the ball down about the 5-yard line that Hartsel fumbled. So now it was 1st and 15 for Decatur. The next play, the kid does the same thing. I throw another flag. But now it's 25. This goes on twice more. They're at the 40-yard line, 45-yard line, and it's still 1st down. Well, Steve Rivers calls timeout. The referee has to go talk to him. This night, the referee was friend of mine named by Denny Thornton. Denny is one of the most calm, collected people I've ever met. Steve is jumping 4 foot off the air, screaming and hollering, and it's because of me, because I've done this to him. Well, Denny sits there and he listens to him. He walks back to the huddle, walks up to me, both ready for play. And I said, Denny, what do you want? He said, well, he asked me to ask you if you and Rhonda would go out to dinner with him right after the ball game with him and his wife. Well, I started laughing like you've never seen. Well, this infuriated Steve even more. Then he walks back over to him and he said, what did you tell him? Well, then he told him what he had told me. And he said, why did you tell him that? He said, because you know he's doing his job. I know he's doing his job, and he's not going to do anything else but what he's supposed to do. And you need to get the kid out. So he pulled the kid out. And Steve did call apologize after that for that. But I say all this to draw some parallels. And we're going to check on how some of the people in the Bible have used their rule books over a period of time. And we're going to start with in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And he made man. And then to help man, he took a rib and made woman. And he put them in the Garden of Eden with one rule. Do not eat of the tree of good and evil. One rule was all they had to abide by. As everybody, even the children here know, Eve partook of the fruit by the encouragement of Satan, gave it to Adam. Adam partook of the fruit. They were kicked out of the garden, and they were to die. And Adam would face having to till the soil, and Eve would have to face childbirth, and they would face death. In chapter 6 of Genesis, same, and it's hot up here. Rhonda, you were right. Chapter 6 of Genesis, we meet a gentleman by the name of Noah. Now, Noah did everything in the eyes of God. He did everything right. Verse 6 of that book, and it repented the Lord that he made man on earth, and it grieved him in his heart. And God decided to destroy the whole world and everything in it, except Adam and his three sons and their wives, and Noah and his three sons. So God gave Adam a plan. He gave him a specific thing to do. He had to build an ark. He had to build, because no one knew what a boat was in an ark, but he was to build this ark out of gopher wood. He told Noah what size to build the ark. He told him how many windows, how many doors, where to put them. He told him what to pitch it with, where to pitch it, inside and out. And we don't know what would have happened if Noah had used a board of pine in this ark. We don't know what happened, because he did what God asked him to do. Because if he obeyed the plan, him and his family were saved, and along with the animals that he had in the ark. But they were so simple, Noah was the only one in the world, the only one with his three sons that were doing God's work. Later in Genesis, we read about Joseph. Now, Joseph had it rough in life. His brothers had sold him off to slavery. He was a servant in Potiphar's house. He was tempted in Potiphar's house. Potiphar's wife wanted Joseph. Joseph ran from her. He wound up in prison. But God delivered him from prison to make him one of the rulers in Egypt, by which he saved the children of Israel. But the only thing that Joseph did, he followed the rules that God had set before him. We read where they left Egypt, and every time something bad happens, they're ready to grumble. Now, this is a group of people that have saw the 10 plagues and what they have done to Egypt. This is a group of people that had been marched out of Egypt across the Red Sea, where the seas were held back, and they walked across the sea on dry land. And this is a people that saw the oceans come back over and kill all Pharaoh's army. But these are the same people that later on grumbled because they didn't have no water, grumbled because they didn't have enough to eat. They built a golden calf to worship. But after all, they had seen this. In 2 Chronicles, we meet two men. Well, David's going to move the ark, and the other is going to move the ark. And they put it on a new cart, so where they can move the ark out and get it back. They're going, and the ark hits a hole, and the oxen stumble. Uzzah puts his hand up to save the ark. He's doing something that's good, but God strikes him dead. because they had not followed the rules. They did not let the Levites move it. And even though sometimes we think we're doing something good, we need to go back and check what we are doing. Late in the 50s and 60s, I barely remember it. But I remember the church splitting. And mainly over the orphans' home issues and over supporting of colleges and things like that. I work at several different plants across the state and in Tennessee. There's a place called Cherokee Nitrogen in Cherokee, Alabama, west of here. Two of the engineers I work with, one is a Church of Christ, one's a Methodist, and then the maintenance manager is a Baptist. And we get in discussions all the time. Well, the member of the church goes to a liberal church in Florence. And their church has grown tremendously, they say. They have to have two Sunday morning services to get everybody in. On Sunday night, they just have to have one service. Wednesday night, they have to have one service. But on Sunday morning, they have to have two. So the place that they were meeting, the lot was so small, they couldn't add to it. So they sold that church and built a new church. But when they started designing church, they didn't have enough money to build the whole thing at one time, so they were going to build it in sections. The first section they built was a youth center. Now, what's peculiar about this is the people that had went out of God's law and started doing things that they didn't have authority to do are upset at the new generation who is controlling the church now, because they have put this youth center in. They started the snowball, and it started continuously rolling downhill, and it's bigger, and now nobody can stop it. Because that church is gone, not from just liberal church, but denominationally. Some denominations are more close to us than they are. But all because that once you bend a rule, it's going to break. And once it breaks, you can't do anything. But later on, we read the story about Job and I'm not going to go through all of it, because what he did, what he had served God all his life, what the devil put before him to get him to turn from God, and Job never did. He always stayed faithful. And God blessed him for it after all this was over with to his foe. In the fourth chapter of Acts, we read where the Christians were selling their houses and land and giving it to the apostles that they might distribute it to the needy. Barnabas sold land and he brought it to the apostles and it was distributed to the needy. In chapter 5, we read about Ananias and Sapphira that did the same thing, but they withheld some of it. And God struck them dead when they were asked, and they said, lied about it. They didn't follow the rules. How many of us would be around now if every time we broke a rule, God struck us dead? All these examples I've used, some were either good, some of them are bad. Some of them followed the rules, some of them didn't. But we are to follow the rules. And if we don't, we will pay for them in the end. You know, the New Testament, Christ came and he went to Gethsemane, he was praying, and he was betrayed. They took him out of the garden. He was denied three times by Peter. They took him to a trial that was set up illegally. He was spat on. He was defiled. He was rejected. They put a corner of thorns on his head. They whipped him. They made him bear his cross so Joseph had him too. Then they took nails and drove in. Have you ever hit your finger with a hammer? Just think about someone driving a nail through your hand. They put him on the cross and hung him up to die. And the only thing he could say, Father, forgive them. I know what they know. What they know, not what they do. And could we be more like Christ? My wife emailed me an email last week, and it really touched me. A lot of y'all have probably read this. I'm not a very computer-minded person, and I get emails at work, and that's about the only time I get emails. But I read this, and I'm going to read it to you. A few years ago, a group of salesmen went to a regional sales convention in Chicago. They assured their wives that they'd be home in plenty of time for Friday night's dinner. In their rush, with tickets and briefcases, and one of these salesmen inadvertently kicked over a table which held a display of apples. Apples flew everywhere. Without stopping looking back, they all managed to reach the plane in time for their nearly missed flight. All but one. He paused, took a deep breath, got in touch with his feelings, and experienced a twinge as he arrived that he needed to go back. He told his buddies to go on without him, waved goodbye, and told one of them to call his wife when they got back to their home destination, and explained that he was taking a later flight. Then he returned to the terminal where the apples were all over the floor. He was glad he did. The 16-year-old girl was there. She was totally blind. She was softly crying, tears running down her cheeks, and her frustration, and at the same time groping for apples from her spilled produce as the crowd swirled about her, no one stopping, no one cared to help her. The salesman knelt on the floor and with her gathered up all the apples and put them back into the basket and helped her set up her display once more. As he did this, he noticed many of the apples had become battered and bruised, and these he set aside in another basket. When he had finished, he pulled out his wallet and said to the girl, "Here, please take this 20 for the damage we did. Are you okay?" She nodded through her tears, and he continued, "I hope this didn't spoil your day too badly." As the salesman started to walk away, the bewildered blind girl called out to him, "Mister." He paused and looked back into those blind eyes. She continued, "Are you Jesus?" He stopped his stride and he wondered. Slowly he made his way to catch a later flight, and with a question burning, bouncing in his soul, "Are you Jesus? Do people mistake you for Jesus? What's our destiny? Is it not to be more like Jesus, that people cannot tell the difference as we live and interact in the world with the blind, blind to His love and His grace? Knowing Him more than simply quoting Scripture and going to church. It's actually living the Word in life unfolds day to day. You're the apple of His eye, even though He has been bruised by the fall. He stopped what He was doing and picked you and me up on the hill of Calvary and paid the full price for our undamaged fruit. For our damaged fruit, excuse me. Let us live like we are worth the price He paid." In Matthew 5:44, Jesus said, "But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you." That it is probably the hardest, to me, that's probably the most difficult law to keep. But Christ did die for us, and we have to strive to do His will and His laws. I hope what I've had to say will cause you to look at God's rule book and look at it close and live our lives and put them into the correspondence with God's, our lives in correspondence with God's law. One day we'll stand before God and we will receive a just reward, whether it be good, whether it be bad, whether we did the rules or we broke the rules. Following rules will never be easy, and we will always be rebuked and scorned for it. In First Peter 3:14, "But if I suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are you. But if you're afraid of their terror, neither be you troubled." when I was a senior in high school, I had the privilege of having Brother A.J. Rollins as a Bible teacher. And I see Randy's here. I think I see Ginger. We were in class together. Brother Rollins and those that came before me, and a few of those that came after me had Brother Rollins, was strictly memory work. But the first in his book, the first memory verses, was 1 Peter 3:15. And I'm going to read it. I know it, but I'm going to read it because it's a. But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and be ready always to give an answer of everybody that asks the reason of the hope is in you. With meekness and fear, having a good conscience, that whereas they speak evil of you as evildoers, they may be ashamed that falsely accuse you of your conversation in Christ. You know, in life, we have people that are trying to tear us down. We have people that are trying to build us up. But it's up to us to build ourselves up and obey God's law. If you're here today and you haven't followed God's rules, you have publicly sinned, you have opportunity to come as we're about to sing this song. And if you haven't obeyed God and you haven't been baptized, you have opportunity to do so. And I encourage you to start your life on serving God as we stand and as we sing.